Chapter 2. Jesse drove his new black Ford Explorer through the empty streets of Paradise, the theater marquee looking like some kind of ghost light sitting on top of morning fog. Suit had told him it was time to upgrade, that this year's Explorer got a better pursuit rating than Jesse's model, that they had beefed up suspensions and performed better, and that you could get them even more easily pre-wired than before for police radios and what Suit called all the other fun cop shit. Jesse had told him to stop. He was sold, had gone to the board, and had been issued the Explorer he was driving now. He got them to issue Suit one, too. Molly said she was sticking with her old Cherokee. She just shook her head at the time and said, "Boys with their souped-up toys." As Jesse got to the lake, he saw the flashing blue lights, like a different kind of light show now in the first hour after sunrise. He parked the car, got out, and ducked underneath the yellow crime tape, noticing Suit's Explorer parked next to the medical examiner's van and two other patrol cars. No onlookers here yet. No cell phone pictures being taken. Soon, though, word would get out. It always did. In the old days, before the advent of digital portable radios, there had briefly been an app people in Paradise could download onto their phones that live-streamed the PPD's police scanners, all in the name of transparency. Jesse had shut it down first chance he got. Yeah, Jesse always thought, what the world needs. More fucking transparency. He walked toward the water. The new state medical examiner, Dev Chadha, and Suit were standing over the body. Peter Perkins was there, too. He'd been with Jesse on the PPD as long as Molly and Suit had, and hadn't even changed after his morning run. He was in a faded Patriots Super Bowl t-shirt and gray sweatpants and New Balance sneakers, the color of tangerines, already walking the immediate area. Gabe Weathers was doing the same. Jesse just assumed both Peter and Gabe had heard on the new portable radios that had been issued to everybody in the department. Now they were both taking photographs and video with their phones, trying to get as complete a picture of the scene as possible. There were 12 men and women in the Paradise Police Department. A third of them were here now, before 7 on a Sunday morning. They all understood why. It never mattered whether it was a big city or a small town. Murder was still the main event. The body was still face down, about 20 yards from the water's edge, the back of his head matted with blood that did not yet appear completely dry. Jesse didn't know how many bodies there had been for him in his cop life, in L.A. and here. Had never tried to process his personal body count. Just knew there had been too many. The first one had been a shooting victim on a side street near Dodger Stadium, slumped over the wheel of a car. 2 bullets to the back of the head. Hector Rodriguez. The shit you remembered. He'd wanted to throw up, too, but knew if he did, he would never hear the end of it. Death before dishonor. "You call I&I yet?" Jesse said to Suit. The Identification and Information Unit from the state police, with an office in Marshport now, was attached to the new police lab there. Suit grinned. "I might have waited until I saw the chief's vehicle arriving at the crime scene," Suit said. "But they're on their way?" Jesse said. Suit was still grinning. "Well, yeah, now they are." Jesse turned to Dev. "How'd you get here so fast?" "Don't sleep," he said. "Got no life other than this job right now." Now he grinned. "And this is the first homicide I've caught since I got this job." "No ID?" Jesse said to Suit. Suit shook his head. He was wearing jeans but had to put on a blue PPD windbreaker over a polo shirt. Jesse had never met a cop happier to no longer be in uniform than Luther Suitcase Simpson. "Nothing in the back pockets of his jeans or in the general vicinity," Suit said. "Dev and I were waiting for you to roll him over."
"You didn't have to wait."
"You suddenly stopped being a control freak overnight?" he said. "I need to tell Gabe and Peter." was part of the ongoing dynamic between the two of them. Even before the son Jesse didn't know he had, Cole, had shown up from Los Angeles, he'd treated Suit like a son. But Suit constantly reminded him that he was about to turn 40 and didn't need Jesse to still hold his hand on the job. Suit had still waited for Jesse to show up and take full control of the scene. Usually the Stadies would take charge of the investigation as soon as they showed up. But both Jesse and Suit knew the rules of engagement were different in Paradise. Jesse had the same standing with Brian Lundquist, the chief homicide investigator with the Massachusetts State Police, that he'd had with Healy, Lundquist's predecessor, now retired. Neither one of them had ever treated Jesse Stone like just another small-town cop, mostly because they knew better. "The control thing is just one more habit I'm trying to quit," Jesse said. "I'm going to have to see some evidence of that before I believe it," Suit said. "And don't do it all at once," Dev said. "You risk decompression syndrome."
"Decompression syndrome?" Jesse said.
"The bends," Dev said. Jesse knew the drill by now. They all did. They weren't showing disrespect to the dead by standing over the body and talking some cop smack with one another. Somehow it just made standing over the body easier for them all to handle. Just more rituals of the job. Ones you'd never find in any book.
"Who found him?" Jesse asked Suit.
"Woman who lives between the lake and the park," Suit said. "Christina Sample. I played football with her brother, Tommy, in high school." Sometimes Jesse thought Suit had played football with every male in Paradise who was around his age.
"Christina was out early walking her dog," Suit continued. "She's pretty upset. She thought it was somebody who might have been sleeping it off after partying too hard last night."
Jesse turned to Dev. "A lot of blood," Jesse said.
"Whoa," Dev said. "You don't miss anything."
"Fuck off," Jesse said.
Dev grinned and saluted.
"Yes, sir," he said. Molly said one time that Dev was a dead ringer for the actor who starred in Slumdog Millionaire. Jesse had asked her which Clint Eastwood Western that was. But when he'd looked up the actor on the internet, he'd seen Molly was right. Molly just knew a lot of things about a lot of topics that didn't interest Jesse in the slightest.
"When there's this much, it can take hours to dry completely," Dev said.
"The guys say they can't see any sign that the body has been moved, so it must have happened here."
"How do you shoot somebody here and nobody hears the shot?" Jesse said.
"My guess," Dev said, "happened during the fireworks."
Jesse said, "Shell casing?"
Suit shook his head.
"Guy must have grabbed it."
"What about the round?" Jesse said.
"It'll depend on the caliber," Dev said. "But from the looks of the entrance wound, it's probably still inside him."
"You said nothing in the back pockets?" Jesse said to Suit.
"No phone," Suit said. "No wallet. Weird, unless it was a robbery."
"Okay," Jesse said. "Let's turn him over."
"You don't think we'll catch some shit from the CPACs?" Suit said.
State police detectives from Crime Prevention and Control. They were the ones who investigated untimely deaths. Jesse had always wondered about that with homicides. If they weren't untimely, what the hell were they?
"It would be me catching the shit," Jesse said, "but I won't."
With Suit's help, they gently rolled the body over. There was no exit wound to the forehead, so the bullet was still inside him. As Jesse reached down to close the man's eyes, Suit said,
"I don't know the guy."
"I do," Jesse said,